is in Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. Before we actually look at that text, which we'll do in a moment, I want to say a few things. First of all, I think it'd be unfair of me not to thank you all for the encouragement, the kindness that you shared and given to us through, the last year and a half. Ever since we were thinking about coming out this way, we visited here a couple different times. I was able to come last year to the youth forum that was done, and I met a lot of you then if I hadn't met you prior, and I just appreciate all of you for who you are and for what you're doing for the Lord and for your families and for the people here. So I just want to say that. Thank you for that. I also want to say that you guys have had a hand in making this possible for us, and so that's another level of which I'm thankful. Certainly by your prayers and by the support that this congregation is offering to both of us. So thank you for that. As is alluded to, I just moved here at the end of April. And so I haven't known most of you for very long at all. Like I said, maybe over the last year we've touched base a couple times. We see faces and we're like, I know I should know you, but remind me of your name. Those kinds of situations. But if you did know me at all from before here, particularly when I was in Alabama, I lived there until I was about 22, 23. I think it was right after my 23rd birthday that I moved to Atlanta. And in that time, particularly in my 20s, I had been seriously considering just being single forever. And there's a whole lot of reasons for that. And so this topic, when Roger sent out the opportunity to be involved in this series that you guys do through the summer, this topic stuck out to me, and so I said I want to talk about that. I talked about it one time prior in Atlanta, because as Roger said, the group that we were a part of that we kind of helped start with some other people ended up, that group ended up being about 50% single people. And that was all kinds of age ranges and sexes and all kinds of demographics that represented that single group. And so when I was thinking about what does the Bible say about that then, I think much of that applies to now. And so I studied up again about it and started thinking about it more with 5 years of hindsight. And I think it's really important to talk about this because I'm sure many of you kind of feel this and maybe even realize it from a statistical level, but there are more and more single people. There are more and more people in general. The trend of the population is always going up, but percentage-wise, those that are single, or you might say unmarried, is increasing. And there's a lot of reason for that. I think some good, some not so good. The good part of that, and I have a lot of statistics on my outline that I'm not going to go through all of them with you guys, but just for instance, in 1960, I looked at this from sources like the U.S. Census Bureau. If you just really need all the sources, come to me later. I can share them with you. But in 1960, 6.9 million households in the United States were single households. But in 2017, there were 35.25 million households that categorized themselves as such. It went from 66% of households being family households in 2012, just in a matter of a few years. From 1970, there was 81%, so it was almost a 20% drop in family households. And so what we often think of when we think of this topic is we think of the degradation of family. And I don't want to speak for you necessarily, but I'll just say that that is what I often think of. I think of the family unit not being upheld. I maybe think about divorce rates being correlated to this kind of topic, right? And certainly that's a part of the conversation, but I think what's also happening in the 21st century, particularly here in the United States of America, is that more and more people are just opting to live alone. Perhaps for economic reasons, perhaps because there's more opportunity for every person to be able to support themselves as their life unfolds. Perhaps because there's more mobility literally and economically. Perhaps because people are living longer and are closer to their families or friends or what have you. They can connect through social media, phones, all that kind of stuff. So maybe being in a relationship isn't quite viewed the same way that it once was. I can't speak to all of those things, but what I do understand is that this is perhaps, at least in American history and perhaps the world over, the most that there have ever been single people, single adults. And so I think it's important, like anything that we approach, we take an idea, we take a truth, we take a reality of life, and we say, well, what is there anything that the Bible has to say about this? Does God have an opinion on this? Does he have any insight for me to understand? Does he have something that he wants me to meditate and think about? And I think he does. And that begins in Matthew chapter 19. Particularly here in Matthew chapter 19, we're going to be looking at verses, beginning in verse 10, and we're going to be looking to verse 12, essentially, just to begin our conversation about this. So, give you a little insight into the way my brain works. Generally, when I'm trying to think through a topic or an idea or a problem, I tend to think about the questions that that thing involves, right? So the topic that I've been given for this evening is single or the unmarried Christian. In fact, the topic was specifically the single Christian, it is good. And we're going to talk about kind of the it is good part here in a moment. But I started contemplating the single Christian. What does that entail? What do I need to think through in that? And the first question that came to mind, is it better or is it worse than being married? You know? And depending on your personality, some of you might in the room be going, it's way worse. It should have been, you know, I'm going to be single or I should have been single or whatever. Hopefully you're not thinking that, but there's some of you that may. And other people might be thinking, man, it'd be better not to be single, right? It is better to not be single. But in fact, the Bible sort of is kind of neutral about this. Let's begin reading here in Matthew chapter 19, beginning in verse 10. The disciples said to him being Jesus, if such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry. And this is immediately after Jesus, just by the way, this is immediately after Jesus had told them about divorce when they asked the question, is it lawful to divorce a wife for any cause? And Jesus unveils to them, reveals to them, that it was not in God's intent for that to have been the case from the beginning. But Moses, because of the hardness of their heart, had given them the ability or the leniency to do so. Right? So on the heels of that conversation, this is what's said here in verse 10. If such is the case, a man with his wife, it is better not to marry. And Jesus says this in verse 11. Not everyone can receive this saying, but only those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by men. And there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Let the one who is able to receive this receive it. All right. So Jesus is alluding to, even before what we read, he's alluding to the creation story, right? And most of us can probably think back on Genesis chapter 2 and remember that God creates Adam. And then after a short period of time, the realization hits that it's not good for Adam to be alone. And so God provides for Adam from his own flesh a helpmeet or a helper, right? And so if you're aware of that story, if you understand that story, your impulse to this question might be, it is better to not be single, to remain unmarried. It's better to be married than to stay single, right? But what's interesting about this is even with that within consideration, Jesus doesn't say yes. In fact, their question is almost exactly the question I'm posing in verse 10. But if that's the case, right, if marriage is that serious, if you can't undo it that simply, then it's better just not to get involved with it at all. That's basically what they're saying. And Jesus says, essentially, yeah. Like, if you can receive that statement, receive it. Now, how many of us want to receive the statement is kind of the next question that comes to mind, right? And certainly the Bible has more to say about that. But I think it's important that we understand that when we're considering singleness, remaining unmarried, the question is not better or worse. And we even see that from Jesus. He relents, he accepts that, yes, if that's the way you view marriage and divorce, then maybe it is better for you to remain unmarried. And we're going to come back to this idea in a moment, but in fact is alluded here in verse 12 that singleness is even preferable in some contexts. Right? Specifically, if this is your view of marriage and the difficulty of not being able to just divorce someone for any reason, then maybe you, if you think like that, should remain unmarried. But when you get to verse 12, Jesus describes further instances where someone might be single, right? Look at verse 12 again. For there are eunuchs, and for those of you who are wondering, eunuch is the idea that you're not able to procreate, right? And Jesus describes this as being coming about a few different ways. So in verse 12, he says, there are eunuchs who have been so from birth. They were just born unable to bear families. They weren't able to reproduce. There are some who are made eunuchs by men. And there are some who have been made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. I don't particularly think that last phrase is necessarily meaning that they mutilated themselves or anything like that. But the idea is that they've withheld something so that they could pursue the kingdom more fully. So we have three different descriptions. Those who are born without the ability to produce a family for themselves, those who have been made that way, and those who have chosen it. So Jesus says, is it better to be single than to be married? Not necessarily. Okay, so why would I then? Well, context might determine that for us. Circumstance might determine that for us. I don't know many of you very closely at all. And even if I knew you closely, I'm not sure I would know your situation according to verse 12 here. But if we're all honest, there are some of us who might fit one of these categories. There are some of us who may never have families and be able to produce that for ourselves. Whether it's happened to us, whether we chose it, whatever, that may just be the situation that we find ourselves in. And so Jesus says here that he recognizes that. I think that's a huge step for us as we think about this idea of being single. What comes with that is the idea also of not having a family, not having children that you bear for yourself. And Jesus acknowledges that may be the case for some people. Jesus also acknowledges not only is that the case sometimes, or is that the circumstance sometimes, but that sometimes people make that choice. Right? The last part of verse 12 says that some have done it for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Can you imagine putting yourself in a position to give up a family, potentially, because you value the kingdom of heaven so much? Now, I'm not here to offer you parameters with which to kind of measure your life against and say, okay, if you think this way or if this is presented to you, then this is the choice you have to make. But Jesus is presenting us the idea that that is a choice you can make. And so it's important for us as we think about the idea of being unmarried, we think about being single, we acknowledge that one is not inherently better than the other, but there are choices and circumstances that might inform a decision or a life that unfolds before us. And the reason I wanted to kind of spend the beginning of this lesson highlighting that is because I feel like some of the ways that I think about being unmarried or being single are not necessarily the ways that Jesus thought about it. And what I mean by that is maybe you're tempted to feel like being single or being unmarried is a failure of some sort. Right? Jesus certainly didn't talk about it that way. In fact, the two ways that he talked about it were like, this is the harder, kind of more noble road to take, right? When they said, well, then it's better not to marry. He said, yeah, receive that statement if you can. Right? And then the other one is circumstantially that may happen to you, or you may have chosen to do that for the sake of the kingdom. And Jesus certainly is going to look favorably on someone who gives up something that costs so much for the sake of heaven. How many stories has Jesus relayed to us that give us just that lesson? And so Jesus looks at this for the Christian, for the one who's faithful, as not a failure, but rather something that's pretty noble. That's something that may have to be endured by certain circumstances, but is not something that you should be ashamed of if that choice is made for you or if you make that choice. And so I think that's important to say. I also think that's important for those of us who are not single to think about. As we look around the room and we see people that are unmarried for whatever reason, and there's certainly a lot of biblical reasons that they may be unmarried or remain single, we need to contemplate what Jesus has said about this, engage how we interact with them, and how we think about them in that light. For 23 years of my life, I was not married. I'm 28 now. Now, certainly, I shouldn't have been married at 12. That would have been a disaster. Probably, like, some sort of government agency would have been called in, and then things would have gotten weird. But for the years that I was an adult, and I wasn't married, for the few that were there, even that short time of my life, I interacted with and felt the pressure to not be that way. And I think there's a lot of well-meaning intention behind that. Certainly any mother or father is going to want grandkids. What a blessing that is. Certainly any mother and father is going to want to see their child with someone who cares about them, right? Your aunts and uncles are going to want that for you too. Your friends probably want that for you too. But we have to be careful in measuring our interactions with people that may be single or unmarried due to various circumstances, and not portray that that is where their value lies, in having a family, in pursuing a marriage. Certainly, God has created man and woman for just that occasion, but when the Son of God himself is confronted with this dilemma, his response was, if you can receive the statement that it's better not to marry, then receive that. And if you can understand that some people can't have families, some people by choice, some by circumstances, if you can make that choice for the kingdom of heaven, then do that. In fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, if you would turn there with me, Paul has a lot to say about this. Paul probably being the most famous single man in the Bible. If you want to think about him that way, I'll just lay claim to having laid that in your mind. He has a lot to say about this, and it's worth noting that as Paul begins talking about this, look with me in verse 26. Sorry, verse 6, not verse 26. I apologize. In verse 6, as he enters into this discussion, he says, now, as a concession, not a command, I say this. I wish that all were as I myself am, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. We're going to come back to this verse in a moment, but it is important to see that as Paul begins to discuss some of what we're going to talk about, what I'm going to bring to your attention, that he's giving a godly man's perspective. And you might even limit him more readily to a man in the first century who had a very specific context and very specific circumstances that he was dealing with. And so this was his advice in that time. And I think that's fair because there is something about Paul's setting that seems very particular to that moment, right? It seems like he was writing with some specific events in mind that might soon come to pass, where this advice would be particularly useful and helpful for the believers of that time. But at the same time, we know the words of Jesus, Matthew chapter 19, and Paul is not far off from them. It's not like he's speaking out of the side of his mouth something that wouldn't make sense otherwise. And we certainly know that Paul lived this out himself. And so there's weight behind these words, beyond the fact that the Holy Spirit preserved them for us through Paul's pen. And so I don't take these words lightly. I do take them as his opinion, but I weight them heavily. And I hope you would too as we continue to read here. Let's look at verse 26. Verse 26 here. I'll begin in verse 25. Now concerning the betrothed, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. So again, he emphasizes that it's an opinion, but it's a weighty one. I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. This is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none, and those who mourn as though they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, and those who buy as though they had no goods, and those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it. For the present form of this world is passing away. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord and how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you. Sorry, I skipped ahead here. Not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks that he is not behaving properly toward his betrothed, if his passions are strong, and it has to be, let him do as he wishes. Let them marry. It is no sin, but whoever is firmly established in his heart, being under no necessity, but having his desire under control, and has determined this in his heart to keep her as his betrothed, he will do well. So then, he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. We'll stop there for now. That was a lot. That was a long reading. There was a lot of things being discussed, but primarily, as Paul has noted, he's giving us kind of his weighty godly opinion about a circumstance that may be really specific to his time. But nevertheless, he says, look, there's some stuff that's going to happen, and I think that it would be better for those who are unmarried to remain that way. And if you're married, certainly don't put your wife away, particularly unbiblically, ungodly way, but stay as you are. Stay as you are. I think that advice resonates on a couple of different levels. Particularly in verses 26 through 28, Paul says one of the reasons that you would remain this way in the given context is because that you'll be free from anxiety. And he talks about that. The married man and the married woman, do you know what they tend to be anxious about? Like, how to take care of their spouse, right? How to keep them happy. And by extension, you could assume that that would be true if kids are in the picture, right? How to keep the family happy. But do you know what Paul says for the believer that's single is what they're anxious about? In fact, in this text, Paul says that all that you are anxious about if you're single as a believer is how to serve the Lord. Now, I don't think that that's true in the sense that we don't have other anxieties that creep into our hearts and our lives from time to time. But the point that Paul is trying to make is, like, what is your day-to-day focus, right? If you're a believer, if God has given you a helpmeet, you're certainly to continue serving the Lord, but you also now have taken on a new responsibility as a spouse, maybe even as a mother or a father. But for those who are single, those who remain unmarried, your sole concern before God is serving Him. And you don't have any responsibility weighing you down to your wife or your husband that you also fairly have to consider. And so I think this is important for our discussion. The reason why I think this was a good title for this lesson that Roger gave me, Singles, It Is Good, is primarily because of what Paul talks about here. If you're a Christian, and you're asking yourself that question, should I remain single? Should I remain unmarried? And you have every biblical godly right to marry. The question for you needs to be this. Can I give myself more completely to God by doing this? I think what Paul is suggesting is he's saying, yeah, like the bottom line is you actually could do that. I don't want to diminish all of those of us who are married. I fall into that camp. And at 21, I didn't necessarily believe I would fall into that camp. But here I am, and so is Paul telling me that I'm not going to serve the Lord? No, that's not what Paul is saying, clearly. But in this text, if you were to ask Paul, who is going to have the undivided attention? Well, for a single person, it should be God. Right? There's there's nothing else that that person has tied themselves to, that at the end of the day, that God is going to bind them unwaveringly to serving. Okay? And so, for those of us who may be in a position to still be considering, should I be single? Should I remain unmarried? I would strongly, strongly consider you to think about that possibility. Certainly, I'm not going to like write you off if you get married. I don't think anyone here will. I think we'd all be happy for you. But I think what Paul is saying is there's a lot of good that the Lord's kingdom could have done in it if more people chose to remain as they are. Certainly, we see the good that Paul did. We don't undervalue that. Why can't we have a Paul in this room? Why can't we have a few more? But there's something else to consider that Paul brings up. And that is perhaps what we might call the disadvantages of being single, being unmarried. And Paul acknowledges those. Look in verse 8 of chapter 7. Verse 8 of chapter 7. To the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Look at verse 32. We read this a moment ago. I'll read it again. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord and how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things and how to please his wife. All right, so some of the disadvantages of being single, particularly in verse 8, as we're going to notice here, is that there's a personal kind of responsibility that we have towards ourselves. And we have to be really honest about this. This is kind of an awkward thing to consider, especially to share with other people. But think and be honest with yourself, because you're the only person that you're going to sell short if you're not honest about this. If you're considering remaining single, you do have to ask yourself the question, do I have enough self-control to do this for the rest of my life? What you're not asking yourself is, am I going to be able to do this perfectly? Right? Those of us who are married haven't done this perfectly. Right? Being a married person doesn't mean that you'll have self-control for the rest of your life. But the question that Paul is kind of forcing us to ask is, do you have the ability to remain as you are? Can you be pure in that way? Is it reasonable to think that you can be self-controlled? And as he says in this verse, in verse 8, he actually calls it, verse 9, he actually says that it is better to marry than to burn with passion. So perhaps, in one sense, you could say that it is better. You know, the initial question that we asked in this lesson, is it better to be single or is it better to be married? Jesus was kind of like, well, if you can take that saying, take it. And he also said maybe circumstances and choice has a part in that. But what Paul is saying, that if you cannot be self-controlled, then it actually is better for you to get married. It's going to help you. What I don't want to convey right now is that it will solve those problems. I'm certainly not saying that. I know in my life and in my heart, it hasn't solved those issues. Like, they don't go away. But certainly it helps. It is an aid. I don't want any young man or young woman here or anyone else that is unmarried and single to think that, man, if I was just married, like, all the sexual temptations that I have would just disappear. That is not the case. And Paul acknowledges, however, that if you're going to burn with passion, then pursue this. God has given it to you. In fact, God has designed it to be that way to some extent. So the question is not so much, is it better to be single than and unmarried? Be single and unmarried. It's not so much which one is right or wrong. It's a much more nuanced conversation. So you have to ask yourself, am I willing to accept that for myself, as Jesus said? Am I able to exercise self-control? And if you can say yes to both of those things, then the advice that I believe Jesus might give you, and certainly Paul would give you, is to seriously consider remaining in the state that you are. Now, certainly, if you don't have self-control, Paul would say otherwise. And so, the advantages to remaining single, that you could potentially serve the Lord more fully than you could otherwise. The disadvantage is burning with passion if you don't have that self-control. So, as we go through, kind of we're wrapping up here, I have a couple more things I want to say about this. And this is going to be more towards the rest of us. If you're not single, for whatever case, right, like you make that choice and you're married and you have single people in this church, you have Christians that you're friends with that are single, you interact with people that are unmarried, be accepting of those that make that choice. The lesson title that I was given was Singles, It Is Good. And you have to accept that that's a good thing. It's always challenging to accept differences. Obviously, that's much of what racism's predicated on, right? Like, we're different, and that must mean one is better than the other, right? And that's where racism comes from. Or classism, or any other negative ism you can think of, is drawing on some sense of entitlement, some sense of inherent, I'm going to say, betterness, right? Like, I'm just better than that thing that's different, that person that's different, that situation that's different. And that's not the case here. So for those of you that have people that you interact with in the faith that would fall into this category, accept the choice that they've made. Accept the circumstances, maybe, that have put them in this position, even if it's only for a little while longer. Jesus certainly would. Paul certainly would. And so I think it's important for us to understand. In verse 7 of chapter 7, Paul even says, "I wish that all were as I myself am." And the language that he uses here is, "but each has his own gift," which by implication means that the ones who are single as Paul was, he viewed that as a gift that you were able to do that. I think most of us, the way that the culture that we live in portrays having a family and being married generally is like a gift, right? Like, that's a good thing. We celebrate it. I can't think of a time in anyone's life where they spend more money about something, because it's a celebration, right? You invite everybody to partake in that union, to see you. You know, you go out, you hang out with friends who also aren't single, right? It's viewed as like a good thing. Paul talks about singleness as a gift. You serve the Lord. He wishes that everybody could have the gift that he has. Be accepting of those that choose to live out that gift. Be understanding of those that, like I mentioned before, might be there because of circumstances. There are some circumstances I haven't really touched on tonight. The conversation in Matthew chapter 19 that we didn't really talk about, the part about marriage and divorce, might be part of why they're unmarried or why they're single. Maybe they had to put away someone that hadn't been faithful to them and was unwilling to change and to come back to them. And so maybe it's a choice that's sort of been forced on them in that way, right? They didn't ever necessarily see themselves exercising this gift, as Paul might say, but here they are, right? Are you going to encourage them in that? Or are they going to feel kind of implicitly from you that they're failing? That they're kind of missing a limb, so to speak. You know, that some part of them is now gone. Paul would say that they have a real opportunity to serve the Lord. And so we need to encourage that in the people that we're around. And finally, for those of us who are not single, I would encourage us to be active in your responsibility. There's a whole text that I'm just going to read for you. If you want to turn there, you're certainly welcome to, but I would emphasize just really listening to this and finding yourself somewhere in this text. So imagine you're going to interact with someone in the next 5 minutes that is unmarried and single of faith, right? And I don't think that's a stretch to think that's going to happen as soon as the sermon's over. Listen to this text in Titus chapter 2, beginning in verse 3. But as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, in love, and in steadfastness. Older women, likewise, are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. Likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled. Show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works. And in your teaching, show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us. Certainly, this text touches on some relational things that involve being married. If a young woman is married, like, certainly the older women should be showing her how to be submissive to her husband and how to have a good family and home and be a good mother. But did you notice there's so many other things in this list that aren't implicit to being married? If you're an older woman, whether you're married or unmarried, you have a responsibility to the younger woman. If you're a younger woman, whether married or unmarried, you have a responsibility to the older women that this text points out. Likewise from older men and younger men. These characteristics, these interactions that we're supposed to be having with each other, and that's really what Titus 2 is really talking about, is like, in this church, in this family, what kind of relationships should we really be like prioritizing and pursuing? I didn't notice anywhere in this text, from old men to young men, or from older women to younger women, to be telling them to find a husband or to find a wife. Though you might imply some of those things because of your personality or because of what you like, because God did design those things. But the emphasis in this text is things like this, to be sober-minded. Can a single person be sober-minded? Can a married person be sober-minded? Can I help you do that? Can you help me do that? Can I be dignified? Can I be self-controlled? Can I have a sound faith even if I don't have a husband? Can I be reverent in my behavior even if I don't have a wife? I know all these things are simple answers, and I know none of this is profound or deep necessarily. I'm just reading what the verse says. But it's really easy to let our opinions, to let our culture shape the way we expect people's lives to unfold. And I don't think that's inherently wrong. It just happens. And so it's really important that as we consider things in our walk with God, we're probably going to go through a lot of stages. You know, singleness might just be a stage in our life, or it might be the way our life unfolds. Being a newlywed, as Josh is going to talk about in a couple weeks, might never be a stage in our life. It might be a stage in our life. So it's important for us to understand and meditate on the truths that God has shared with us about each thing that may occur for us or for the Christian next to us, so that we can have a godly perspective on who they are and what they should be about. And so I would encourage us all to consider this. Certainly there are a lot of corners of this concept that I didn't really touch on. It's a really big topic the more I tried to chase it down, because it touches on a lot. It touches on families, it touches on marriage and divorce, it touches on a lot of different stuff. But I think as we talked about this evening, I hope it's clear that Jesus didn't view people that didn't have families and that were not married as failures. Neither should we. And Jesus didn't look at people that were married and had families necessarily as pure successes. And neither should we. We should be evaluating each other based on how we best serve the Lord and our godly character. Because that's what Jesus did, and that's certainly what Paul promoted. So I hope this lesson was helpful for you. I know it's been for me, and I know every speaker always says that, but it's true. It was interesting. The first time I did this lesson, I was like pretty newly married. No, I was not married. I take that back. I was not married the first time I did this lesson. Then I was very newly married the second time I did a similar lesson. And now I am doing kind of a third related lesson on this topic. And I've been married for a few years now, certainly not a long time. And my perspective has shifted a little bit each time. And I don't imagine that's going to change if I do this a similar topic sometime in the future. But I think that's the wisdom of God, is that no matter what circumstance we find ourselves in, there's a truth that's relevant to where we are, that He's provided for us. So if you're single, I hope this lesson was helpful for you where you are. And for those of us who are not single, I hope that this lesson is helpful for you and where you are, being involved with those who might be. So anyway, if there's anyone here this evening that have not been pursuing serving the Lord like you should, that wasn't like your deciding factor in your life, and maybe hasn't been for a while, if ever, now's your time to change that. Now's your time to talk to God about that shortcoming, about those failures that you've had. But thankfully, God has given us the grace of being able to change that course. As long as you are here and you have breath in your lungs, God is willing to work with you to make you who He wants you to be and who you need to be. So if there's anyone here that needs the prayers of the group, whether or not it's about singleness, certainly we're here for you. Just like we talked about this kind of niche topic that the Bible has some things to say about, certainly your circumstance, God's got something to say about that too, whatever that may be. So we'd encourage you to seek out counsel, to seek out prayers, whatever it is you may need tonight, if you're willing to do that. I assume, is there a song next? I can't remember. Okay. Well, if anyone has a need, come while we sing this song.